slipping away. The man gave a muffled wail and sank down, eyes screwed shut, one hand clutching at his neck, the other hanging useless, stick dropping from his fingers. Logan hefted the short piece of wood left in his hands and clubbed him across the face with it. It snapped his head back and drove him into the turf, mask half torn off, blood bubbling out from underneath. Logan's head exploded with light, and he tottered and sagged down onto his knees. Someone had hit him in the back of the head, hit him hard. He swayed there for a moment, trying to stop himself falling on his face. Then things came suddenly back into focus. The red-haired woman was standing over him, raising her stick high. Logan shoved himself up, flailed into her, fumbled with her arm, half pulling at her, half leaning on her, ears ringing, the world swinging madly. They staggered around, tugging on the stick like two drunkards wrestling over a bottle, back and forth in the circle of grass. He felt her punching him in the side with her other hand. Hard punches, right in the ribs. "Ah!" he growled, but his head was clearing now, and she was half his weight. He twisted the arm with the stick around behind her back. She punched him again, a knock on the side of his face that brought the stars back for an instant. But then he got hold of her other wrist and pinned that arm as well. He bent her backwards over his knee. She kicked and twisted, eyes screwed up to furious slits, but Logan had her fast. He freed his right hand from the tangle of limbs, brought his fist up high, and smashed it into her stomach. She gave a breathy wheeze and went limp, eyes bulging. He flung her away, and she crawled a foot or two, pulled her mask down, and started coughing puke onto the grass. Logan stumbled and swayed, shook his head, spitting blood and dirt out onto the grass. Aside from the retching woman, there were four black, crumpled shapes stretched out in the circle. One of them was grunting softly as Pharaoh kicked him over and over. She had blood all over her face, but she was smiling.
"I am still alive," Logan muttered to himself. "I am still."
There were more of them coming through the archway. He swung around, almost falling over. More, four more from the other side. They were trapped.
"Move, Pink!"
Pharaoh dashed past him and sprang up onto the first bench, then the second, then the third, springing between them with great strides. Madness. Where was she going to go from there? Red Hair had stopped puking. She was crawling towards her fallen stick. The others were closing in fast, more of them than ever. Pharaoh was already a quarter of the way back and showing no signs of slowing, bounding from one bench to the next, making the planks rattle.
Shit!
Logan set off after her. After a dozen benches, his legs were burning again. He gave up trying to spring between them and started scrambling however he could. As he flopped over the backs of the benches, he could see the masked men behind, following, watching, pointing and calling, spreading out through the seats. He was slowing now. Each bench was a mountain. The nearest mask was only a few rows behind. He scrambled on, higher and higher, bloody hands clutching at the wood, bloody knees scraping across the benches, skull echoing with his own breath, skin prickling with sweat and fear. Air loomed suddenly empty before him. He stopped, gasping, arms waving, teetering on the edge of a dizzying drop. He was close to the high roofs of the buildings behind, but most of the seating near the back had already been taken down, leaving the supports exposed, single looming pillars, narrow beams between them, and a lot of high, empty space. He watched Pharaoh spring from one soaring upright to another, then run across a wobbling plank, heedless of the plunging space below. She jumped off onto a flat roof at the far end, high above him. It seemed a very long way away.
Shit!
Logan teetered out across the nearest beam, arms stretched out wide for balance, feet moving in an old man's shuffle. His heart was banging like a smith's hammer on an anvil. His knees were weak and wobbling from the climb. He tried to ignore the scrambling and shouting of the men behind him and look only at the knotted surface of the beam, but he couldn't look down without seeing the spider's web of timbers below him and the tiny flagstones of the square below them, far below. He lurched onto a stretch of walkway still intact, clattered up it to the far end. He hauled himself up onto a timber above his head, locked his legs around it, and dragged himself along on his arse, whispering, "I am still alive," to himself over and over. The nearest mask had made it to the walkway, was running along it towards him. The beam ended at the top of one of the upright struts, a square of wood a foot or two across. Then there was nothing. Two strides of empty air, then another square at the top of another dizzying mast, then the plank to the flat roof. Pharaoh stared at him from the parapet.
"Jump!" she screamed. "Jump, you pink bastard!"
He jumped. He felt the wind around him. His left foot landed on the square of wood, but there was no stopping. His right foot hit the plank. His ankle twisted, his knee buckled. The dizzy world pitched. His left foot came down, half on the wood, half off. The plank rattled. He was in the empty air, limbs flailing. It seemed like a long time.
Oof!
The parapet crashed into his chest. His arms clawed with it, but there was no breath left in him. He began to slide back, ever so slowly, inch by terrible inch. First he could see the roof, then he could see his hands, then he could see nothing but the stones in front of his face.
"Help!"
he whispered, but no help came. It was a long way down, he knew that. A long, long way, and there was no water to fall into this time. Only hard, flat, fatal stone. He heard a rattling, the mast coming across the plank behind him. He heard someone shouting, but none of it mattered much now. He slipped backwards a little further, hands scrabbling at the crumbling mortar.
"Help!"
he croaked, but there was no one to help him. Only the masks and Pharaoh, and none of them seemed like the helping kind. He heard a clunk and a despairing shriek, Pharaoh kicking the plank and the mask falling. The scream fell away, it felt like for a long time, then it was cut off in a distant thud. The mask's body smashing to pulp against the ground far below, and Logan knew he was about to join him. You have to be realistic about these things. There would be no washing up on a riverbank this time. His fingertips were slipping slowly. The mortar was starting to come apart. The fighting, the running, the climb, they had all sucked the strength out of him, and now there was nothing left. He wondered what sound he would make as he plunged through the air.
"Help!"
he mouthed. And strong fingers closed around his wrist, dark, dirty fingers. He heard growling, felt his arm being pulled, hard. He groaned. The edge of the parapet came back into view. He saw Pharaoh now, teeth gritted, eyes squeezed almost shut with effort, veins standing out from her neck, scar livid against her dark face. He clutched at the parapet with his other hand, his chest came up beyond it, he managed to force his knee over. She hauled him the rest of the way, and he rolled and flopped on his back on the other side, gasping like a landed fish, staring up at the white sky.
"I am still alive,"
he muttered to himself after a moment, hardly able to believe it. It wouldn't have been too much of a surprise if Pharaoh had trodden on his hands and helped him fall. Her face appeared above him, yellow eyes staring down, teeth bared in a snarl.
"You stupid, heavy pink bastard!"
She turned away, shaking her head, stalked to a wall, and started climbing, hauling herself up fast towards a low-pitched roof above. Logan winced as he watched her. Did she never get tired? His arms were battered, bruised, scratched all over. His legs ached, his nose had started bleeding again. Everything hurt. He turned and looked down. One mask was staring at him from the edge of the benches, 20 strides away. A few more were scurrying around below, looking for some way up. Far below, in the yellow circle of grass, he could see a thin black figure with red hair pointing around, then up at him, giving orders. Sooner or later, they would find a way up. Pharaoh was perched on the peak of the roof above him, a ragged, dark shape against the bright sky.
"Stay there if you want,"
she barked, then turned and disappeared. Logan groaned as he stood up, groaned as he shuffled to the wall, sighed as he began to search for a handhold.
"Where is everyone?" demanded Brother Longfoot. "Where is my illustrious employer? Where is Master Ninefingers? Where is the charming Lady Maljean?"
Giselle looked around. The sickly apprentice was sunk too deep in self-centered gloom to answer.
"I don't know about the other two, but Baez is in the bath." "I swear, I never came upon a man more attached to bathing than he. I hope the others will not be long. All is prepared, you know. The ship is ready. The stores are loaded. It is not my way to delay. Indeed it is not. We must catch the tide or be stuck here until—" The little man paused, staring up at Giselle with a sudden concern.
"You seem upset, my young friend. Troubled, indeed. Can I, Brother Longfoot, be of any assistance?"
Giselle had half a mind to tell him to mind his own business, but he settled for an irritated,
"No, no. I'd wager that there is a woman involved. Would I be right?"
Giselle looked up sharply, wondering how the man could have guessed.
"Your wife, perhaps?"
"No, I'm not married. It's nothing like that. It's, well..."
He fumbled for the words to describe it and failed.
"It's nothing like that is all."
"Ah," said the navigator with a knowing grin. "Ah, a forbidden love, then. A secret love, is it?"
Much to his annoyance, Giselle found that he was blushing.
"I am right, I see it. There is no fruit so sweet as the one you cannot taste. Eh, my young friend? Eh, eh?"
He waggled his eyebrows in what Giselle felt was a most unsavory fashion.
"I wonder what's keeping those two."
Giselle didn't care in the least, but anything to change the subject.
"Maljean and Ninefingers?" "Ha!"
laughed Longfoot, leaning towards him.
"Perhaps they've become involved, eh, in a secret love like yours? Perhaps they've crept off somewhere to do what comes naturally?"
He nudged Giselle in the ribs.
"Can you imagine those two? That'd be something, wouldn't it? Ha!"
Giselle grimaced. The hideous Northman he already knew for an animal, and from what little he'd seen of that evil woman, she might well be worse. All he could imagine coming naturally to them was violence. The idea was perfectly revolting. He felt soiled just thinking about it. The roofs seemed to go on forever, up one, down another, creeping along the peaks, one slippery foot on either side, edging across ledges, stepping over crumbling bits of wall. Sometimes Logan would look up for a moment, get a dizzying view across the tumbling mass of damp slates, pitted tiles, ancient lead, to the distant wall of the Agriont, sometimes even the city far beyond. It might almost have been peaceful, if it wasn't for Pharaoh, fast-moving, sure-footed, cursing at him and pulling him on, giving him no time to think about the view, or the nerve-wracking drops they skirted, or the black figures, surely still seeking for them below. One of her sleeves had been torn half off sometime in the fighting, flapping around her wrist, getting in the way as they climbed. She snarled and ripped it away at the shoulder. Logan smiled to himself as he recalled the efforts Baez had gone to in getting her to change her old stinking rags for new clothes. Now she was filthier than ever, shirt sweated through, spotted with blood and caked with grime from the rooftops. She looked over her shoulder and saw him watching her.
"Move, Pink!" she hissed at him.
"You see no colors, right?"
She clambered on, ignoring him, swinging around a smoking chimney and slithering across the dirty slates on her belly, sliding down onto a narrow ledge between two roofs. Logan scrambled down behind her.
"No colors at all."
"So?"
she threw over her shoulder.
"So why do you call me Pink?"
She looked round.
"Are you Pink?"
Logan peered at his forearms. Aside from the mottled bruises, red scratches, blue veins, they were sort of pink, it had to be said. He frowned.
"Thought so."
She scurried away between the roofs, right to the end of the building, and peered down. Logan followed her, leaned out gingerly over the edge. A couple of people were moving around in the lane below, far below, and there was no way down. They'd have to go back the way they came. Pharaoh had already moved away behind him. Wind flicked at the side of Logan's face. Pharaoh's foot slapped against the edge of the roof, and then she was in the air. His jaw hung open as he watched her fly away, back arched, arms and legs flailing. She landed on a flat roof, grey lead streaked with green moss, rolled once, then came up smoothly to her feet. Logan licked his lips, pointed at his chest. She nodded. The flat roof was 10 feet below, but there might have been 20 feet of empty air between him and it was a long way down. He backed away slowly, giving himself a good run-up. He sucked in a couple of deep breaths, closed his eyes for a moment. It would be perfect, in a way, if he fell. No songs, no stories, just a bloody smear on a road somewhere. He started running. His feet thumped on the stone. The air whistled in his mouth, plucked at his torn clothes. The flat roof came flying up towards him. He landed with a shuddering impact, rolled once, just as Pharaoh had done, stood up beside her. He was still alive.
"Ah!" he shouted. "What do you think of that?"
There was a creaking sound, then a cracking, then the roof gave way under Logan's feet. He grabbed despairingly at Pharaoh as he fell, and she slid through after him, helpless. He tumbled in the air for a sickening moment, wailing, hands clutching at nothing. He crashed down on his back. Logan coughed on choking dust, shook his head, shifted painfully. He was in a room, inky dark after the brightness outside. Dust was filtering down through the light from the ragged hole in the roof above. There was something soft under him. A bed. It had half collapsed, leaning at an angle, blankets covered in broken plaster. There was something across his legs. Pharaoh. He snorted a gurgling laugh to himself. In bed with a woman again at last. Unfortunately, it wasn't quite what he'd been hoping for.
"Stupid fucking pink!"
she snarled, scrabbling off him and over to the door, bits of wood and plaster sliding off her dusty back. She hauled on the doorknob.
"Locked! It's—"
Logan crashed past her, ripping the door off its hinges and sprawling out into the corridor beyond. Pharaoh sprang over him.
"Up, Pink, up!"
A handy-looking length of wood had split from the edge of the door, a couple of nails sticking out of the end. Logan snatched it up in his hand. He struggled to his feet, stumbled down the corridor a few paces, came to a junction. A shadowy hallway stretched away to either side. Small windows cast sharp pools of light on the dark matting. No way to tell which way Pharaoh had gone. He turned right towards a flight of stairs. There was a figure moving carefully down the dim corridor towards him. Long and thin, like a black spider in the darkness, balanced on the balls of its feet. A chink of light shone on bright red hair.
"You again," said Logan, weighing the length of wood in his hand. "That's right, me."
There was a jingling sound, a flash of metal in the dark. Logan felt the piece of wood ripped out of his fingers, and he saw it fly over the woman's shoulder and clatter away down the corridor. Unarmed again, but she didn't give him long to worry about it. There was something in her hand, something like a knife, and she threw it at him. He ducked out of the way, and it hissed past his ear, then she jerked her other arm, and something slashed him across the face, just under his eye. He lurched back against the wall, trying to understand what kind of magic he was facing. It was like a metal cross, the thing in her hand. 3 curved blades, one with a hook on the end. A chain looped from a ring on the handle and disappeared up her sleeve. The knife thing darted out, missed Logan's face by an inch as he bobbed away, struck a shower of sparks as it ripped back along the wall and slapped smoothly back into her hand. She let it drop, swinging gently from its chain, rattling against the floor, jumping and dancing towards him as she edged forward. She jerked her wrist, and the thing shot out at Logan again, slashed across his chest as he tried to get away, spattering drops of blood against the wall. He dived at her, but his outspread arms caught nothing. There was a rattle, and he felt his foot dragged from under him, his ankles snapped round painfully, caught by the chain as she ducked by. He sprawled out on his face, started to push himself up. The chain snaked under his neck. He just got his hand behind it before it snapped taut. The woman was on top of him. He could feel her knee pressing into his back, could hear her breath hissing through her mask as she pulled, the chain growing tighter and tighter, cutting into the palm of his hand. Logan grunted, scrabbling to his knees, lumbering unsteadily to his feet. The woman was still on his back, all her weight bearing down on him, pulling at the chain as hard as she could. Logan flailed around with his free hand, but he couldn't get at her, couldn't throw her off. She was like a barnacle stuck fast to him. He could hardly breathe now. He tottered forward a few steps, then dropped over backwards.
"Ah!"
whispered the woman in his ear as his weight crushed her into the floor. The chain went slack enough for Logan to drag it clear and slither out from under it. Free. He rolled over and grabbed the woman's neck with his left hand, started squeezing. She kneed at him, dug at him with her fists, but his weight was across her and the blows were weak. They snarled and gasped and croaked at each other, animal sounds, faces only inches apart. A couple of spots of blood dripped from the cut on his cheek and pattered on her mask. Her hand came up and started fumbling with his face, pushing his head back. Her finger forced its way up his nose.
"Ah!"
he screamed. Pain stabbed up into his head. He let go of her and staggered up, one hand clasped to his face. She scrambled away, coughing, landed a kick in his ribs that bent him over, but he still had a grip on the chain, and he yanked on it with all his weight. Her arm snapped out, and she yelped and flew straight into him, his knees sinking into her side, crushing the breath out of her. Logan grabbed hold of the back of her shirt, half-lifted her off the floor, and flung her down the stairs. She rolled and flopped and bounced her way down, slid to a stop on her side near the bottom. Logan was half-tempted to follow her down and finish the job, but he had no time. There'd be more where she came from. He turned and hobbled back the other way, cursing his twisted ankle. Sounds crept up on him from all around, echoing down the corridor from who knew where. Distant rattling and banging, shouts and cries. He stared into darkness, limping, running with sweat, one hand on the wall to steady himself. He leaned round a corner, trying to see if it was clear. He felt something cold across his neck. A knife.
"Still alive?" whispered a voice in his ear. "You don't die easy, eh, Pink?"
"Pharaoh." He slowly pushed her arm away.
"Where'd you get the knife?"
He wished he had one.
"He gave it me."
There was a crumpled shape in the shadows by the wall, the matting all round soaked with dark blood.
"This way."
Pharaoh crept off down the corridor, keeping low in the darkness. He could still hear the sounds beneath them, beside them, all around them. They crept down a flight of stairs, out into a dim hallway panelled with dark wood. Pharaoh ducked from shadow to shadow, moving fast. Logan could do no more than limp after her, dragging his leg, trying not to squeal with pain whenever he put his weight on it.
"There! It's them!"
Figures in the dim corridor behind. He turned to run, but Pharaoh held her arm out. There were more, coming the other way. There was a big door on his left, standing open a crack.
"In here."
Logan shoved his way through, and Pharaoh darted in after him. There was a heavy piece of furniture beside it, a big cupboard thing with shelves on top covered in plates. Logan grabbed hold of one end and dragged it across in front of the doors, a couple of the plates dropping off and smashing on the floor. He pressed his back against it. That should hold them for a moment, at least. A big room with a high vaulted ceiling. Two huge windows took up most of one wood-paneled wall, a big stone fireplace facing them. A long table stood between, 10 chairs on either side, set for eating with cutlery and candlesticks. A big dining room, and there was only one way in. Or out. Logan heard muffled shouting beyond the door. The big cupboard wobbled against his back. Another plate clattered from its shelf, bounced off his shoulder, and smashed on the stone flags, scattering fragments across the floor.
"Nice fucking plan," snarled Pharaoh.
Logan's feet slid as he strained to hold the teetering cupboard up. She dashed over to the nearest window, fumbled at the metal frames round the little panes, prizing with her fingernails, but there was no way out. Logan's eye caught on something, an old great sword mounted over the fireplace as an ornament, a weapon. He gave the cupboard one last shove, then hurried over to it, seized hold of the long hilt in both hands, and ripped it from its bracket. It was blunt as a plough, the heavy blade spotted with rust, but still solid. A blow from it might not cut a man in half, but it would knock him down all right. He turned just in time to see the cupboard tipping over, dropping shattering crockery all over the stone floor. Black figures spilled into the room, masked figures. The one at the front had an evil-looking axe, the next a short-bladed sword. The one behind him was dark-skinned, with gold rings through his ears. He had a long, curved dagger in either hand. Those weapons were not for knocking a man on the head with, not unless they meant to knock his brains right out. Seemed that they'd given up on taking prisoners. Killing weapons, meant to kill. Well, so much the better, Logan told himself. If you say one thing for Logan Ninefingers, and one thing only, say he's a killer. He eyed those black-masked men clambering over the fallen cupboard, spreading out cautiously around the far wall. He glanced over at Pharaoh, lips curled back, knife in her hand, yellow eyes sparkling. He fingered the grip of his stolen sword, heavy and brutal. Just the tool for the job, for once. He plunged at the nearest mask, yelling at the top of his voice, swinging the sword over his head. The man tried to duck away, but the tip of the blade caught him on the shoulder and knocked him reeling. Another one jumped in behind him, chopping with his axe, sending Logan stumbling away, gasping as his weight went onto his bad ankle. He flailed around with the big sword, but there were too many. One scrambled over the table, got between him and Pharaoh. Something hit him in the back, and he stumbled, spun, slipped, lashed out with the sword, and hit something soft. Somebody screamed, but by then the one with the axe was coming for him again. Everything was a mess of masks and iron, clashing, scraping weapons, curses and cries, ragged breathing. Logan swung the sword, but he was so tired, so hurt, so aching. The sword was heavy and getting heavier all the time. The mask weaved out of the way, and the rusty blade clanged into the wall, knocking a great chunk out of the wooden paneling and biting into the plaster behind, the shock nearly jarring it out of his hands.
"Oof!"
he breathed as the man kneed him in the stomach. Something hit him in the leg, and he nearly fell. He could hear somebody yelling behind, but it seemed far away. His chest was hurting, his mouth was sour, there was blood on him, all over him. He could hardly breathe. The mask stepped forward, and again, smiling, smelling victory. Logan lurched back towards the fireplace, his foot slipping, falling down on one knee. All things come to an end. He couldn't lift the old sword any more. There was no strength left, nothing. The room was growing blurry. All things come to an end, but some only lie still, forgotten. There was a cold feeling in Logan's stomach, a feeling he hadn't felt for a long time. "No," he whispered. "I'm free of you." But it was too late, too late. There was blood on him, but that was good. There was always blood, but he was kneeling. And that was wrong. The bloody nine kneels to no man. His fingers sought out the cracks between the stones of the fireplace, prizing between them like old tree roots, pulling him up. His leg hurt, and he smiled. Pain was the fuel that made the fires burn. Something moved in front of him. Masked men, enemies. Corpses, then.
"You're hurt, Northman!"
The eyes of the closest one sparkled above his mask. The shining blade of his axe danced in the air.
Want to give up yet?
Hurt? The bloody nine threw back his head and laughed. I'll fucking show you hurt!
He tumbled forward, flowed beneath the axe, slippery as fishes in the river, swinging the heavy blade in a great low circle. It crunched into the man's knee and cracked it back the wrong way, scythed on into his other leg and ripped it out from under him. He gave a muffled scream as he spun onto the stones, turning round and round in the air, shattered legs flopping. Something dug into the bloody nine's back, but there was no pain. It was a sign, a message in a secret tongue that only he could understand. It told him where the next dead man was standing. He reeled around, and the sword followed him in a furious, beautiful, irresistible arc. It crunched into someone's guts, folded him in half, snatched him off his feet, and flung him through the air. He bounced from the wall beside the fireplace and crumpled on the floor in a shower of broken plaster. A knife whirled, hissing, stuck deep into the bloody nine's shoulder with a damp thud. The black one, with the rings through his ears. He had thrown it. He was on the other side of the table, smiling, pleased with his throw. A terrible mistake. The bloody nine came for him. Another knife flashed past, clattered against the wall. He sprang over the table, and the sword followed behind. The dark man dodged the first great swing, and the second. Fast and tricky clever, but not clever enough. The third blow bit him in the side. A glancing bite, just a nibble. It only smashed his ribs and knocked him screaming to his knees. The last one was better. A circle of flesh and iron that carved into his mouth and ripped his head half off, showering blood across the walls. The bloody nine plucked the knife from his shoulder and tossed it to the floor. Blood ran from the wound, soaked through his shirt, and made a great, lovely, warm red stain. He dropped and faded away, leaves falling from the tree, rolling across the ground. A man lunged past, slashing at the air where he had stood with a short-bladed sword. Before he could turn, the bloody nine was on him, left hand snaking round his fists. He struggled and strained, but it was useless. The bloody nine's grip was strong as the roots of mountains, relentless as the tide.
"They send such as you to fight me?"
He flung the man back against the wall and squeezed, crushing his hands around the grip of his weapon, turning the short blade until it was pointing at his chest.
"A fucking insult!"
he roared, spitting him on his own sword. The man screamed and screamed behind his mask, and the bloody nine laughed and twisted the blade. Logan might have pitied him, but Logan was far away, and the bloody nine had no more pity in him than the winter, less even. He stabbed and cut and cut and smiled, and the screams bubbled and died, and he let the corpse drop to the cold stones. His fingers were slick with blood, and he wiped it on his clothes, on his arms, on his face, just as it should be. The one by the fireplace was sitting, hanging limp, head back, eyes like wet stones, staring at the ceiling. Part of the earth now. The bloody nine smashed his face open with the sword, just to make sure. Best to leave no doubts. The one who'd had the axe was crawling for the door, legs twisted out and dragging over the stones behind him, gasping and whimpering all the way.
"Quiet now."
The heavy blade crunched into the back of the man's skull and sprayed his blood across the stones.
"More,"
he whispered, and the room turned around him as he sought out the next kill.
"More!"
he bellowed, and he laughed, and the walls laughed, and the corpses laughed with him.
"Where's the rest of you?"
He saw a dark-skinned woman with a bleeding cut on her face and a knife in her hand. She didn't look like the others, but she would do just as well. He smiled, crept forward, raising the sword in both hands. She stepped away, watching him, keeping the table between them, hard yellow eyes like the wolf. A tiny voice seemed to tell him that she was on his side. Shame.
Northerner, eh?
Asked a massive shape in the doorway.
Aye. Who's asking? The stone splitter.
He was big, this one. Very big. And tough. And savage. You could see it on him as he shoved the cupboard away with his huge boot and crunched forward through the broken plates. It meant less than nothing to the Bloody Nine, though. He was made to break such men. Tal'Duru Thunderhead had been bigger. Rud Three Trees had been tougher. Black Dow had been twice as savage. The Bloody Nine had broken them and plenty more besides. The bigger, the tougher, the more savage he was, so much the worse would be his breaking.
Stone shitter, laughed the Bloody Nine. So fucking what? Next to die is what you are, and nothing more.
He held his left hand up, spattered with red blood, three fingers spread out wide, grinning through the gap where the middle one used to be a long time ago.
They call me the Bloody Nine.
The stone splitter ripped off his mask and threw it on the floor.
Liar! There's plenty of men in the north have lost a finger. They ain't all nine fingers. No, only me.
That great face twisted up with rage.
Ye fucking liar! You think to scare the stone splitter with a name that's not your own? I'll carve a new ass in you, maggot. I'll put the bloody cross on you. I'll put you back in the mud, you coward fucking liar. Kill me?
The Bloody Nine laughed louder than ever.
I do the killing, fool.
The talk was done. Stone Splitter came at him with axe in one hand and mace in the other, great heavy weapons, though he used them quick enough. The mace swung across, smashed a great hole through the glass in one of the windows. The axe came down, split one timber of the table in half, made the plates jump in the air, the candlesticks topple. The Bloody Nine twitched away, frog-hopping, waiting for his time. The mace missed his shoulder by an inch as he rolled across the table, cracked one of the big flat stones on the floor, split it down the middle, chips flying through the air. Stone Splitter roared, swinging his weapons, smashing a chair in half, knocking a chunk of stone out of the fireplace, chopping a great gash in the wall. His axe stuck fast in the wood for a moment, and the Bloody Nine sword flashed over, broke the haft into splintered halves, leaving the Stone Splitter with a broken stick in his paw. He flung it away and hefted the mace, came on even harder, swinging it round with furious bellows. It sailed over, and the Bloody Nine sword caught it just below the head, ripped it out of the big hand. It twisted through the air and clattered into the corner. But the Stone Splitter pressed forward, spreading his great hands out wide. Too close to use the big sword now. Stone Splitter smiled as his huge arms closed around the Bloody Nine, folding him tight, holding him fast.
Gaya!
He shouted, squeezing him in a great hug. An awful mistake. Better to embrace the burning fire.
Crack!
The Bloody Nine's forehead smashed into his mouth. He felt the Stone Splitter's grip slacken a little, and he wriggled his shoulders, making room, wriggling, wriggling, mole in his burrow. He swung his head back as far as it would go. Billy goat charges. The second headbutt smashed the Stone Splitter's flat nose open. He grunted, and the big arms released a little more. The third cracked his cheekbone. The arms fell away. The fourth broke his heavy jaw. Now it was the Bloody Nine holding him up, smiling as he mashed his forehead into the shattered face. Woodpecker pecking. Tap, tap, tap. 5, 6, 7, 8. There was a satisfying rhythm to the crunching of the face bones. 9, and he let the Stone Splitter fall. He sagged sideways and crumpled onto the floor, blood spilling from his ruined face.
How's that for you?
Laughed the Bloody Nine, wiping blood out of his eyes and giving the Stone Splitter's lifeless body a couple of kicks. The room spun around him, swam around him, laughing, laughing.
How's that? Fuck.
He stumbled, blinked, sleepy, campfire guttering.
No, not yet.
He dropped to his knees. Not yet. There was more to do. Always more.
Not yet,
he snarled, but his time was up. Logan screamed. He fell down. Pain everywhere. His legs, his shoulder, his head. He wailed until the blood caught in his throat, then he coughed and gasped and rolled around, scrabbling at the floor. The world was a blurry smear. He gurgled up blood and drooled it out long enough to start wailing again. A hand clamped over his mouth.
Stop your damn crying, Pink! Now you hear me?
A voice whispering urgent in his ear. Strange, hard voice.
Stop your crying, or I leave you, understand? One chance!
The hand came away. Air came out between his gritted teeth in a high-pitched, keening moan, but not too loud. A hand clamped round his wrist, dragged his arm up. He gasped as his shoulder stretched out, was dragged over something hard. Torture.
Up, bastard! I can't carry you! Up now! One chance, understand?
He was lifted slowly. He tried to push with his legs. The breath whistled and clicked in his throat, but he could do it.
Left foot, right foot. Easy.
His knee buckled, pain stabbed up his leg. He screamed again and fell, groveled on the floor.
Best to lie still.
His eyes closed. Something slapped him hard in the face, and again. He grunted. Something slid under his armpit, started to pull him up.
Up, Pink! Up, or I leave you! One chance, you hear?
Breath in, breath out. Left foot, right foot. Longfoot fussed and worried, first tapping his fingers on the arm of his chair, then counting on them, shaking his head and moaning about tides. Giselle stayed silent, hoping against hope that the two savages might have drowned in the moat, and that the whole venture might therefore come to nothing. There would still be plenty of time to make it to Angland. Perhaps all was not lost. He heard the door open behind him, and his dreams were punctured. Misery swaddled him once again, but it was soon replaced by horrified surprise as he turned around. Two ragged shapes stood in the doorway, covered in blood and filth. Devils, surely, stepped out from some gate to hell. The Gurkish woman was cursing as she lurched into the room. Nine Fingers had one arm across her shoulders, the other swinging loose, blood dripping from his fingertips, head drooping. They wobbled together for a step or two, then the Northman's stumbling foot caught on a chair leg, and they tumbled onto the floor. The woman snarled and shrugged off his limp arm, shoved him away, and scrambled up to her feet. Nine Fingers rolled over slowly, groaning, and a deep gash in his shoulder yawned open, oozing blood across the carpet. It was red in there, like fresh meat in a butcher's shop. Giselle swallowed, horrified and fascinated at once.
God's breath!
They came for us.
What? Who came?
A woman sidled cautiously around the doorframe, red-haired, all in black, wearing a mask. A practical, Giselle's numb brain was saying, but he could not understand why she was so bruised or walking with such a limp. Another edged through behind her, a man armed with a heavy sword.
You're coming with us,
said the woman.
Make me,
Maljin spat at her. Giselle was shocked to see she had produced a knife from somewhere, and a bloody one at that. She should not be armed, not here. He realized, stupidly, that he was wearing a sword. Of course he was. He fumbled with the hilt and drew it, with the vague intention of knocking the Gurkish devil on the back of the head with the flat before she could do any more damage. If the Inquisition wanted her, they could damn well have her, and the rest of them too. Unfortunately, the practicals got the wrong idea.
"Stop it!"
hissed the red-haired woman, glaring at him through narrow eyes.
"I will not," said Giselle, tremendously offended that she might think he was on the side of these villains.
Said Quai.
"Ah!"
groaned Nine Fingers, clutching up a bloody handful of carpet and dragging it towards him, making the table lurch across the floor. A third practical crept through the door around the red-haired woman, a heavy mace in his gloved fist. An unpleasant-looking weapon. Giselle could not help picturing the effect it might have on his skull if swung in anger. He fingered the hilt of his sword uncertainly, feeling in terrible need of someone to tell him what to do.
"Coming with us," said the woman again, as her two friends advanced slowly into the room.
"Oh, dear,"
murmured Longfoot, taking cover behind the table. Then the door to the bathroom banged against the wall. Baez stood there, entirely naked, dripping with soapy water. His slow gaze took in first Pharaoh, scowling with her knife out, then Longfoot hiding behind the table, Giselle with sword drawn, Quai standing with his mouth open, Nine Fingers sprawled out in a bloody ruin, and finally the three black-masked figures, weapons at the ready. There was a pregnant pause.
"What the fuck is this?"
he roared, striding into the center of the room, water dripping from his beard, down through the grizzled white hairs on his chest, off his slapping fruits. It was a strange sight to see. A naked old man confronting three armed practicals of the Inquisition. Ridiculous, and yet no one was laughing. There was something strangely terrifying about him, even without his clothes and running with wet. It was the practicals who shifted backwards, confused, scared even.
"You're coming with us,"
the woman repeated, though a certain doubt seemed to have entered her voice. One of her companions stepped warily toward Baez. Giselle felt a strange sensation in his stomach, a tugging, a sucking, an empty, sick feeling. It was like being back on the bridge in the shadow of the Maker's house, only worse. The wizard's face had turned terribly hard.
"My patience is at an end!"
Like a bottle dropped from a great height, the nearest practical burst apart. There was no thunderclap, only a gentle squelching. One moment he was moving toward the old man, sword raised, entirely whole. The next he was a thousand fragments. Some unknown part of him thudded wetly against the plaster next to Giselle's head. His sword dropped and rattled on the boards.
"You were saying?" growled the first of the magi.
Giselle's knees trembled, his mouth gaped. He felt faint and queasy and awfully hollow inside. There were spots of blood across his face, but he dared not move to wipe them off. He stared at the naked old man, unable to believe his eyes. It seemed that he had watched a well-meaning old buffoon change in an instant into a brutal murderer, and without the slightest grain of hesitation. The red-haired woman stood there a moment, spattered with blood and flecks of meat and bone, eyes wide as two dinner plates, then started to shuffle slowly backwards towards the door. The other one followed her, almost tripping over Nine Fingers' foot in his haste to get away. Everyone else stayed motionless as statues. Giselle heard quick footsteps in the corridor outside as the two practicals ran for their lives. He almost envied them. They, it seemed, would escape. He was trapped in this nightmare.
"We must leave now,"
barked Baez, wincing as if he was in pain.
"Just as soon as I have my trousers on. Help him, Longfoot,"
he shouted over his shoulder. For once, the navigator was lost for words. He blinked, then got up from behind the table and bent down over the unconscious Northman, ripped off a strip of his tattered shirt to use as a bandage. He paused, frowning, as though unsure where to begin. Giselle swallowed, His sword was still in his hand, but he seemed to lack the strength to put it away. Bits of the unfortunate practical were scattered around the room, stuck to the walls, the ceiling, the people. Giselle had never seen a man die before, let alone in so hideous and unnatural a fashion. He supposed he should have been horrified, but instead he felt only an overpowering sense of relief. His worries seemed now rather petty things. He, at least, was still alive. Chapter 45 The Tools We Have. Glockter stood in the narrow hallway, leaning on his cane and waiting. On the other side of the door, he could hear raised voices.
"I said no visitors."
He sighed to himself. He had many better things to do than to stand around here on his aching leg, but he had given his word, and he meant to keep it. A pokey, unremarkable hallway in a pokey, unremarkable house among many hundreds of others the same. The whole district was recently built, terraces of houses in the new fashion, half-timbered, three stories, good perhaps for a family and a couple of servants. Hundreds of houses, one very much like another. Houses for the gentlefolk, the new rich. Jumped-up commoners, Salt would probably have called them. Bankers, merchants, artisans, shopkeepers, clerks.
Perhaps the odd townhouse of some successful gentleman farmer, like this one here.
The voices had stopped now. Glockter heard movement, some clinking of glass, then the door opened a crack and the maid peered out. An ill-favoured girl with big watery eyes. She looked scared and guilty.
"Still, I am used to that. Everyone seems scared and guilty around the Inquisition."
"She'll see you now," the girl mumbled.
Glockter nodded and shuffled past her into the room beyond. He had some hazy memories of staying with West's family for a week or two one summer up in Angland, a dozen years ago perhaps, although it seemed more like 100. He remembered fencing with West in the courtyard of their house, of being watched every day by a dark-haired girl with a serious face. He remembered meeting a young woman in the park not long ago who had asked him how he was. He had been in a lot of pain at the time, scarcely seeing straight, and her face was a blur in his memory. So it was that Glockter was not sure what to expect. But he certainly had not expected the bruises. He was a touch shocked for a moment.
"Though I hide it well."
Dark purple and brown and yellow under her left eye, the lower lid well swollen. Round the corner of her mouth, too, the lip split and scabbed over. Glockter knew a lot about bruises, few men more.
"And I hardly think she got these by accident. She was punched in the face by someone who meant it."
He looked at those ugly marks, and he thought about his old friend, Colum West, crying in his dining room and begging for help, and he put the two together.
"Interesting."
She sat there all the while, looking back at him with her chin high, the side of her face with the worst bruises turned towards him, as though challenging him to say something.
"She is not much like to her brother. Not much like at all. I don't think she'll be bursting into tears in my dining room, or anywhere else."
"What can I do for you, Inquisitor?"
she asked him coldly. He detected the very slightest slurring of the word Inquisitor.
"She has been drinking, though she hides it well. Not enough to make her stupid."
Glockter pursed his lips. For some reason he had the feeling that he needed to watch his step.
"I'm not here in a professional capacity. Your brother asked me to..."
She cut him off rudely.
"Did he? Really? Here to make sure I don't fuck the wrong man, are you?"
Glockter waited for a moment, allowing that to sink in. Then he began to chuckle softly to himself.
Oh, that's grand. I begin to quite like her.
Something funny, she snapped.
Pardon me, said Glockter, wiping his running eye with a finger. But I spent 2 years in the Emperor's prisons. I dare say if I had known I'd be there half that long at the start, I would have made a more concerted effort to kill myself. 700 days, give or take, in the darkness. As close to hell, I would have thought, as a living man can go. My point is this. If you mean to upset me, you'll need more than harsh language.
Glockter treated her to his most revolting, toothless, crazy smile. There were few people, indeed, who could stomach that for long, but she did not look away for an instant. Soon, in fact, she was smiling back at him, a lopsided grin of her own, and one which he found oddly disarming. A different tack, perhaps.
The fact is, your brother asked me to look after your welfare while he is away. As far as I'm concerned, you can fuck whomever you please, though my general observation has been that, as far as the reputations of young women are concerned, the less fucking, the better. The reverse is true for young men, of course. Hardly fair. But then life is unfair in so many ways. This one hardly seems worth commenting on.
Huh. You're right there.
Good, said Glockter. So we understand each other, then. I see that you hurt your face.
She shrugged. I fell. I'm a clumsy fool.
I know how you feel. I'm such a fool. I knocked half my teeth out and hacked my leg to useless pulp. Look at me now, a cripple. It's amazing where a little foolishness can take you if it goes unchecked. We clumsy types should stick together, don't you think?
She looked at him thoughtfully for a moment, stroking the bruises on her jaw.
Yes, she said. I suppose we should.
Goyle's practical Vitari was sprawled on a chair opposite Glockter, just outside the huge dark doors to the Archlector's office. She was slumped into it, poured onto it, draped over it like a wet cloth, long limbs dangling, head resting on the back. Her eyes twitched lazily around the room from time to time under heavy lids, sometimes coming to rest on Glockter himself, for insultingly long periods. She never turned her head, though, or indeed moved a muscle, as though the effort might be too painful.
Which, indeed, it probably would be.
Plainly, she had been involved in a most violent melee, hand to hand. Above her black collar, her neck was a mass of mottled bruises. There were more around her black mask, a lot more, and a long cut across her forehead. One of her drooping hands was heavily bandaged. The knuckles of the other were scratched and scabbed over.
She's taken more than a couple of knocks, fighting hard against someone who meant business.
The tiny bell jumped and tinkled.
Inquisitor Glockter,
said the secretary as he hurried out from behind his desk to open the door.
His Eminence will see you now.
Glockter sighed, grunted, and heaved on his cane as he got to his feet.
"Good luck," said the woman as he limped past.
"What?"
She gave a barely perceptible nod towards the Archlector's office.
"He's in a hell of a mood today."
As the door opened, Salt's voice washed out into the anteroom, changing from a muffled murmuring into an all-out scream. The secretary jerked back from the gap as if slapped in the face.
20 practicals!
Shrieked the Archlector from beyond the archway.
20! We should have been questioning that bitch now instead of sitting here licking our wounds. How many practicals?
20,
damn it!
Glockter took a deep breath and insinuated himself through the door.
And how many dead?
The arch-lector was striding briskly up and down the tiled floor of his huge circular office, waving his long arms in the air. He was dressed all in white, as spotless as ever.
Though I fancy a hair is out of place, maybe even two. He must truly be in a fury.
How many?
Seven, mumbled Superior Goyle, hunched into his